Vanatira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivirachikacharya Stotra Sisi Srimad His Divine Grace Sisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivirachikacharya Stotra Shata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sikau Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinada Shamakunda Radha Kundagiri Govardhan Ki Madhura Vrindavan Dham ki, Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki, Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Ganga Mai Yamuna Mai ki, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Cheva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Murid Udirayet. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances onto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, onto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, onto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and onto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in the class of Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service onto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with the transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So today we are reading from verse number 5. Chapter 18, Canto 3, Chapter 18, Verse number 5. Tvayi samstite gadaya shirna shirshani asmat bhuje bhuja chutaya ye cha tubhyam balim haranti rishayo ye cha devaha svayam sarve na bhavishyati amulaha Tvayi samstiste gadaya shirna shirshani. Tvayi samstite gadaya shirna shirshani. Asmat bhuja chuttaya ye chatubhyam. Asmat bhuja chuttaya chetat chubhyam. Asmat bhuje chutaya che ye chatubhyam. Balim haranti rushayo che che devaha. Balim haranti rushayo ye cha devaha. Swayam స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. త్వయి సంస్థితే గదయాశీర్ణ శీర్షణి అస్మాద్ భుజేచ్యుతయే చ తుభ్యం. బలిం హరంతి ఋషయో యే చ దేవాః. స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. త్వయి సంస్థితే గదయాశీర్ణ శీర్షణి అస్మాద్ భుజచ్యుతయే చ తుభ్యం. బలిం హరంతి ఋషయో యే దేవః. స్వయం సర్వన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి మమూలః. త్వయి సంస్థితే గదయాశీర్ణ శీర్షణి అస్మాద్ భుజే చ్యుతయా యే చ తుభ్యం. స్వయం సర్వన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. త్వయి సంస్థితే గదయాశీర్ణ శీర్షణి స్మజభూతే చతుభ్యం. హరంతి ఋషయో యే చ దేవః. స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. మాతాజీ, త్వయి సంస్థితే గదయాశీర్ణ శీర్షణి అస్మాద్ భుజే చ్యుతయా యే చ తుభ్యం. బలిం హరంతి ఋషయో యే చ దేవాః. స్వయం సర్వేన భవిష్యంతి అమూలః. సినానిమ్స్: త్వయి, వెన్ యు, సంస్థితే, అర్కిల్, గదయా, బై ద మేస్, శీర్ణ, స్మాష్డ్, శీర్షణి, స్కల్, అస్మద్భుజ, ఫ్రమ్ మై హ్యాండ్, చూతయా, రిలీజ్డ్, యే, దోస్ హూ, చ, అండ్, తుభ్యం, టు యు, బలిం, ప్రజెంటేషన్స్, హరంతి, ఆఫర్, ఋషయః, సేజస్, యే, దోస్ హూ, చ, అన్, దేవాః, డెమిగాడ్స్, స్వయం, ఆటోమేటికలీ, సర్వే, ఆల్, నా, నాట్, భవిష్యంతి, విల్ ఎగ్జిస్ట్, అమూలాహ, వితౌట్ రూట్స్, చ, Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Translation: The demon continued, "When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots." You all can repeat together. The demon continued, "When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots." Purport: Demons are very much disturbed when devotees worship the Lord in the prescribed ways recommended in the scriptures. In the Vedic scriptures, the neophyte devotees are advised to engage in 9 kinds of devotional service, such as to hear and chant the holy names of God, to remember Him always, to chant on the beats, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, to worship the Lord in the form of His deity incarnation in the temples, and to engage in various activities of Krishna consciousness to increase the number of godly persons for perfect peace in the world. Demons do not like such activity. They are always envious of God and His associate. Their propaganda not to worship in the temple or church, but simply to make material advancement for satisfaction of the senses is always current. The demon Hiranyaksha, upon seeing the Lord face to face, wanted to make a permanent solution by killing the personality of Godhead with His powerful mace. The example of an uprooted tree mentioned here by the demon is very significant. Devotees accept that God is the root of everything. Their example is that just as the stomach is the source of energy for all the limbs of the body, God is the original source of all energy manifested in the material and spiritual world. Therefore, as supplying the food to the stomach is a process to satisfy all the limbs of the body, Krishna consciousness or developing love of Krishna is a sublime method for satisfying the source of all happiness. The demon wants to uproot this source because if the root, God, were to be checked, the activities of the Lord and the devotees would automatically stop. The demon would very much satisfied by such a situation in the society. Demons are always anxious to have a godless society in their sense gratification. According to Sridhar Swami, this verse means that when the demon would be deprived of his mace by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only the neophyte devotees, but also the ancient sagacious devotees of the Lord would be very much satisfied. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ulminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrujatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So welcome everyone to this Srimad Bhagavatam class, and I seek the blessings of all the devotees who have assembled here. So the current verse, the text number 5, so here the demon continued. When you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without the roots. So these are some of the harsh words which are spoken by the demon Hiranyaksha addressing to the Lord Boar. The reason is because the Lord has challenged the authority of the demon Hiranyaksha over the planet Earth, which he was trying to destroy. Hiranyaksha has actually dragged the Earth to the bottom of the ocean, and then he was trying to destroy it. And the Lord, in order to save the planet Earth, has taken the form of the boar, and then he has appeared to protect the planet Earth. And that is the nature of the demons. The demons, basically, they derive pleasure by performing such destructive and demoniac activities. That's a basic reason, because anything what we do, any activity what we do, the essential reason is because to derive pleasure, correct? So either you eat something which is palatable, or you know, you spend time with your friends or family. Essentially, the reason why you're doing any activity what you're performing to do is because you derive pleasure from such activity, correct? Now, however, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, this pleasure what you can derive can be either in the mode of goodness or in the mode of passion or ignorance. And this demon also derive pleasure in such activities, but in the mode of passion or in ignorance, whereas the demigods also perform activities, but in the mode of goodness. So here, similarly, Hiranyaksha was also, he was deprived of his pleasure by the Lord, so he became angry at the Lord. And that is the difference between the demigods and the demons. Even the demigods also, you know, act for the sake of, you know, for their pleasure. But the difference is that demigods are someone who is obedient to the Lord. On the other hand, the demons, you know, they neither care for the Lord nor for any Vedic, you know, injunctions. So that is the key difference between the activities of the demigods and the activities of the demons. And in verse number 3 to 5, so these three verse are actually spoken by Hiranyaksha addressing the Lord, you know, the Lord Boar. And these are some of the harsh words which are spoken by the demon addressing the Lord. In verse number 3, we see that Hiranyaksha explains why he thinks that he is entitled to this planet Earth and why his actions are justified. And in verse number 4, he explains, basically he accuses the Lord. He's saying, by saying that the Lord is someone who is sent by his, you know, by his enemies to destroy him, and the Lord is no better than a mere magician or some mystic who would become invisible to kill the demons. And in today's verse, verse number 5, basically he threatens the Lord by saying that he would smash the skull by his mace. So, in this way, these three verses are spoken by Hiranyaksha addressing the Lord in a very disrespectful way. And we also all might have some experience, correct? Let's say when like two family members are fighting with each other, and let's say you interfere between them, correct? And trying to pacify the situation, the first thing they will tell you is that just stay out of it. You know, this is none of your business, correct? And the second thing, let's say that if you keep on insisting on your interference, and the next thing what they would say is that they would blame you. They would point out your mistakes, and they would, you know, make false accusations on you. And ultimately, they may even threaten you to smack you down. And that is what the Hiranyaksha is also trying to do here. In the verse number 3, basically, that's what he says. He basically says to the Lord that it is none of his business. And in the verse number 4, he would falsely accuse the Lord that, saying that, you know, you are someone who was sent by my enemies, and you are just a mere magician. And in the verse number 5, he basically threatens the Lord, saying that, you know, I'm going to just smash your skull by my mace. So same thing happened here also. That is why when you see sometimes when two people are fighting, you may see so many people like a bystanders, but nobody will interfere, correct? So this is one of the reason. But of course, let's say that in the fight involves someone whom you care about, then you would definitely interfere. Doesn't matter what the other person says, because it involves someone whom you care. So similarly, the Lord being the well-wisher of everybody, including the demons, Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam, the Lord is a benefactor of all the living entities, the Lord interferes. Even though the Hiranyaksha has been spoken these harsh words and very disrespectful words towards the Lord Boar, but the Lord didn't really care. So that's why sometimes we see people in the society, you know, especially those people who are well respected in the family or well respected in the society, usually they don't like to get into the fight, correct? Because they are concerned that their reputation may get spoiled. Because when you get into the fight, that means that, you know, people are going to tell bad things about you, you know, people are going to make some false accusations about you. But however, on the other hand, but the Lord being the compassionate, despite the harsh words which are spoken by Hiranyaksha, he still tried to rescue the planet Earth. And that is the greatness of the Lord. On the other side, we see the demons, even though they present very logical, rational and very intellectual arguments and trying to justify their demonic activities, but the problem is that the intelligence of such a demons is which is actually stolen by, you know, Maya. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Namam Duskritno Muda Prapadyante Naradama Maya Pritajnana Asurim Bhava Mashrita. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among the mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion and who partake of atheistic nature of demons do not surrender unto me. So the key word here is Maya Pritajnana, means those intelligence, whose intelligence which is stolen by Maya. Be it the demons mentioned in this, you know, in this Puranas or the modern day scientists or even the Mayavadis, all they are trying to do is basically to kill the God. Of course, one may be surprised to hear that why are the Mayavadis trying to kill the God? Because Mayavadis are someone who also read the Vedas, the scriptures, the Puranas, correct, etc. Then why are they trying to kill the God? So, if you see Prabhupada or even the previous Acharyas, one thing they never tolerated is the philosophy of Mayavada. They would tolerate many things, but they would never tolerate the philosophy of Mayavada, that you can become one with the God, correct? And in this connection, there was a story which was told by Vishwapriya Swami in 1997 in the Udupi Mata. They are the followers of Madhvacharya. Once upon a time, there was a king, and he had an elephant. And this elephant was very dear to the king. And then he would, you know, he would always spend a lot of time with this elephant. He would take care of this elephant very nicely. And he would engage all his servants in taking care of this elephant. And one day it so happened that this elephant was sick. And the king became very much concerned. And then he engaged the best of the best, you know, physicians to, you know, to recover the health of this elephant. And he would every day visit the elephant and make sure that elephant is, you know, progressing in its health. And, you know, and elephant would hopefully one day come out of this sickness. And the king told to his ministers that whoever says that my elephant is dead, I'm going to, you know, cut off that person's head. I don't want to hear the news that my elephant is dead, because the elephant is so dear to the king. And unfortunately, one day it so happened that elephant died out of its sickness. He couldn't recover from his sickness. And now everybody is concerned. Now who is going to disclose this news to the king? Because whoever tells that the elephant is dead, the king will kill that person, correct? However, there was one intelligent minister. He said that I will tell this news to the king. Don't worry. And then he went to the king and he said that, my dear king, I want to give you an update about the elephant. The king said, yes, how is my elephant? And the minister said, the elephant is not moving its trunk. It's not moving the trunk. The king said, okay, it's not moving the trunk. And then the minister said, it is not moving the leg also. And then king thought, okay, maybe the elephant is very sick, so it is not moving the leg also. Then the minister said, it is not moving any part of the body. The king became very concerned. All right? Not moving any part of the body. Then finally the minister said, it is not breathing also. Not breathing. Oh, that means the elephant is dead, no? No. That you decide. I don't know. That you can decide. I'm just telling you that elephant is not moving. It is not breathing. Right? So this is how the Mayavadis also speak. The Mayavadis also say that the God has no form. And the God has no qualities. And the God has no activities. So indirectly, basically, they are trying to kill the God. But they cannot say it like that openly. Because, you know, people won't agree. Correct? So that is how the Mayavadis also, in this way, they are trying to kill the God. That is why it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Correct? Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Which means that the Krishna's transcendental body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is a person. That is why he is addressed as Vigraha, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. And the Lord has innumerable potencies. Parasha Shakti Vivideva Shruyate means the Lord has unlimited names, forms, qualities, pastimes, etc. Means unlimited, means Ananta. And all these potencies of the Lord are not something which is acquired. It is not like the Lord has acquired these potencies at some point of time. Just like the mystic yogis, you know, they acquire the mystic potencies by performing meditation. They acquire these mystic potencies. But the Lord's potencies are not like that. the Lord potencies are not something which he has acquired, but they are of intrinsic in character. For example, the living entities, how do the living entities derive their energy? By eating food, correct? When you eat the food, you get energy. And once the food is digested, then again you feel hungry. That means that you are low in energy, correct? But, so in this way, that means that the energy of the living entity is something which is acquired. But the energies of the Lord are not like that. It is not something which is acquired at a certain point of time, and at a certain point of time he may lose it. So, just like for example, the soul has acquired this body during the time of birth, and at the time of death the soul gives up this body. So this body is just something which is acquired. So there's a point it has acquired, there's a point it's going to lose it also. So the potencies of the Lord are intrinsic in nature. They are not something which are acquired. And another nature of the Lord's potencies is that they are inconceivable. Means they are beyond the perception or the comprehension of the human mind. And even the demigods, who are many times more intelligent than the human beings, even they cannot fully comprehend the potencies of the Lord. And what to speak of the demons who are not even favored by the Lord. So that is why when Hiranyaksha was trying to assess the position of the Lord before he fight, basically he miscalculated. Because he doesn't know the full potency of the Lord. He just thought that Lord is also one more powerful living entity whom we can fight and win upon. Correct? Because when you fight with someone who is equal. Correct? You don't fight with someone who is too powerful because you may lose it. Or you don't fight with someone who is too weak because it's obviously you're going to win. There is no fun in the fight. Correct? So, in this way, Hiranyaksha also, he also thought that just Lord is just a magician or a mystic, or he's one more powerful person who can be defeated, but he does not know the full potency of the Lord. That is because he was under the influence of Maya, because the Maya, one of the potency of Maya is basically to cover the intelligence of a person. And in the Bhagavatam also, 3rd canto, 33rd chapter, verse number 3, Mother Devahuti also says to Lord Kapila that, the Lord is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of cosmic manifestation, and he possesses innumerable energies which are inconceivable. Atmeshwaro tarkasya sahasra shaktihi. Atma Ishwara means the Lord of all living entities. Atarkya means inconceivable. Sahasra, thousand. Shakti means possessing energies. So Mother Devahuti, after listening to these teachings of Lord Kapila, one of her concluding statements, that is where he says that the Lord is someone who has innumerable energies, and these energies are something which are inconceivable. So, and another quality of the Lord's potencies is that it is beyond the logic. Means because logic is something how the human mind can understand things, correct? But however, because the Lord's potencies are incomprehensible, that is beyond the logic. Because even the logic has its own limitations in understanding the Lord. That's why in the Ishopanishad it says, Tad ejati, tad naijati, tad dure, tad antike. Means the Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away at the same time, close. You know, he is everywhere but he is outside of everything. So this looks like contradictory to the logic. Because if something is near, how can it be far at the same time? Means if something is walking, how can it not walk at the same time? So the Lord's activities and the Lord's potencies are also like this. They are beyond the logic. And that is why the Lord can only be understood by Shabda. And one of the Brahma Sutras, it says, Shruteshu Shabda Mulavat Atmani Chaiva Vichitra Chaihi. Means the Lord is free from defects, can be understood only by Shabda, and variegated energies exist inherently in him, which are incomprehensible. That is why in one of the Shad Darshanas, its Nyaya is also one of the Shad Darshanas, means the process with which you understand the absolute reality. But however, it is said that this absolute reality cannot be fully understood by logic. That is why in the Vedanta philosophy, it is the highest regard is given to the Shabda Pramana more than the mere logic. But of course, when you are arguing with a Buddhist or atheist who doesn't agree to the Vedic authority, then the logic is the only tool what you have in arguing with those. So that is why logic also has its own role to play. But however, in understanding the absolute reality, logic has its own limitations. And in the commentary to this Brahma Sutra, Baladeva Vidyabhushan commented on this word, Shabda Mulavat, means he says that the knowledge of Brahman can be obtained only from scriptures. Therefore, we have no authority to consider them illogical when they describe paradoxical attributes within him. Since only the scriptures provide us with knowledge of Brahman, these descriptions of his inconceivable attributes must be accepted. This is not so completely mysterious. Even in this world, it is seen that certain gems and mantras produce supernatural effects resulting from inconceivable power. Because something is inexplicable or inconceivable does not mean that it should be dismissed as something which is impossible. So the example here given is that even in this material world, there are some mantras, like the mantras the snake charmer uses to subdue a snake, or sometimes the gems also, like gemology, because even the gems, it's said to have some mystic potencies. So when such a mundane objects in this material world have these incomprehensible potencies in them, then why not the Lord possesses these incomprehensible potencies in them? So that is the conclusion. So the conclusion is that the Lord is a person, he has unlimited variegated potencies, and these potencies are intrinsic in nature to the Lord, and they are beyond incomprehensible, and they are beyond the logic. And the another interesting fact about the potencies of the Lord is that the Lord possesses those potencies which are contradictory in nature, at the same time both which are contradictory in nature but ultimately take the refuge in the Lord itself. Like for example, the Lord has internal potency, correct? Swarup Shakti. And he also has an external potency called as Maya Shakti. This Swarup Shakti and Maya Shakti are actually having opposite characteristics. The characteristics of a Swarup Shakti is something which liberates. It's liberating in nature. And the characteristics of Maya Shakti is to bind the soul within the, you know, within this material world. But however, even though this Swarup Shakti and Maya Shakti are both diametrically opposite, but both get their support ultimately from the Bhagavan itself. Correct? That is why when Vedavyasa had the darshan of the Lord, in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, he mentions, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Pranihate Male Apashayat Purisham Purnam Mayachatat Apashayam. Means he saw the absolute personality of Godhead along with the external energy which was under his full control. So the Lord is the master of both the internal energy and external energy, even though they are both conflicting in nature. That is why if you sometimes try to understand the other religions, the concept of God and concept of evil, they think that the God is different, evil is different, and sometimes the God fight with evil, sometimes the God wins, sometimes the evil wins, correct? But however, our understanding is that even the evil, basically, even the demons, they derive their ultimately their energy also from the Lord. Even the demigods also derive their energy from the Lord. And also the demons, they also derive strength from the Lord. In this way, the Lord is the ultimate shelter for everything. Because that is something which is, you know, very, you know, difficult to understand. But that is the nature of the Lord. He basically harmonizes opposing energies within himself. Because from our common understanding, when there is light, there cannot be darkness. Where there is vidya, there cannot be avidya. But however, the Lord can harmonize both. That is why Dhruva Maharaj in his prayers in the 4th canto, 9th chapter, 16th verse, he says, My dear Lord, your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multiple energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited and blissful, is the cause of material creation. And basically, for the living entities, those who are suffering these three folds of miseries due to the influence of the avidya or ignorance, the Lord only can extinguish those miseries by his internal potency or yoga maya. As it is said in the second verse in the Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapta Tapatrayo Mulanam. This is also one of the Brahma Sutras, which means the highest truth is a reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Vastava Vastu, which means a factual object or factual substance. Shivadam means well-being. Tapatriya means threefold miseries. Unmulana means causing to uproot. Tapatriya Mulana means he can uproot the threefold miseries. So, and we all know that there are three types of miseries. You know, there is Adhyatmik, Adidaivik and Adibhautik. But of course, ultimately there is only one misery, which is Adhyatmik. That is something which is coming from your own mind. But we don't like to acknowledge that. So sometimes we blame others for our miseries. But ultimately, all the miseries is nothing but Adhyatmik. That is something which is coming from your own mind. That is why saintly persons, you know, they're not affected by anything which is happening externally. ఇట్ ఇస్ సెడ్ మనయేవహి మనుష్యానాం కారణం బంధం మోక్షయోహో బికాస్ ద మైండ్ ఇస్ అ కాస్ ఫర్ బాండేజ్ అండ్ ద మైండ్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో కాస్ ఫర్ ద లిబరేషన్ ఆత్మహి ఆత్మనో బంధుర్ ఆత్మహ్య ఆత్మైవ రిపుర్ ఆత్మన్హ So in this way, for those person whose mind is a friend, as Krishna explains, the man must elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is a friend of conditioned soul and his enemy as well. And ultimately, the Lord being the Manohara means the one who can attract the minds of everyone, can you know, drive away all the miseries by attracting this mind towards him. And that is why people usually think that when they become rich, there will be no more problem. Correct? That's how the people think. But however, when what people meant by that they can remove all their miseries by becoming rich is that they want to have more money. Correct? But if you try to understand this little more carefully, money itself doesn't have happiness in it. Correct? Because money is just a piece of paper. But what you really meant by is that by having money, you're going to exchange that money with some objects. And when you acquire an object, you're going to get happiness. So that's what you meant to say. When you become rich, you're going to be happy, correct? But let's try to understand this a little more carefully. So every object, especially that which is actually of a dead matter, which is just an inert matter, every inert matter has its own intrinsic nature, correct? Like, for example, salt. What is the intrinsic nature of salt? It's to be salty. And what is the intrinsic nature of sugar? It is to be sweet. So every object has its own intrinsic nature. And by eating salt, you cannot expect sweetness. And by eating sugar, you cannot expect saltiness. Every object has its own intrinsic nature, which it can offer you. But we are thinking that by acquiring this object, we're going to be happy. But the intrinsic nature of an object is not... But the happiness is not the intrinsic nature of an object. Then how is it that you are thinking that by acquiring an object, you're going to be happy? So ultimately, it is not the object which is giving you happiness, but ultimately, the happiness is something which is in your mind, nothing more than that. And you are thinking that by getting this object, you're going to be happy. That is why, even if you get an object, after some time, you'll still be miserable. Why? Because happiness is not the intrinsic nature of an object. Happiness is something which is in your mind. And as it is said here, the real object is basically Krishna. And he is the only one who can give you the ultimate happiness. He is the only one who can give you the remove these threefold miseries. That is why in this verse he is addressed as Vastava Vastu. Vastava Vastu means he is the factual object. He is the real object. And this real object, Krishna, is having two qualities. What are those two qualities? Shivadam means well-being or auspiciousness. And Tapatriya Mulanam means he can remove the suffering. And by possessing Lord, by possessing Krishna, that is the ultimate solution for you to get happiness. Correct? Vastu means object. Vastava Vastu means actual, factual object. Because there can be two things. There can be Vastava Vastu or Avastava Vastu, means real object or imaginary or unreal object. This material world can be referred to as Avastava Vastu, means here everything is temporary. And Vastava Vastu means the Lord, the Vaikuntha planets, they are eternal and ever-existing. So they are like Vastava Vastu. So, of course, there can be many more classifications you can make, like Vastava Vastu, Avastava Vastu, Vastava Avastu, and Vastava Vastu also. Like, for example, what is Vastava Avastu? Means real but not existent. Like, for example, you see a rope and you think that it is snake. It is real, but actually it is not existent. So that is Vastav Avastu. And Avastav Vastu means basically it is neither real nor it is existing. Like, for example, you imagine a rabbit with a horn. It is neither real nor existing. So ultimately, the Lord is a Vastav Vastu. Means he is a real and he is existing and he is a real object. And there is also a significance in using this word Vastava Vastu in this Brahma Sutras, especially which is selected in the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Mayavadis usually think that the Lord is impersonal. I mean, he is not someone who is real. But by addressing him as a Vastava Vastu, what it means is that he is not someone who is imaginary, or he is not something which is impersonal, but Lord is something which he is a person. So in this way, we can understand that how the Lord is the ultimate well-wisher of everyone, and who is compassionate towards all his living entities, and who is willing to save the planet despite the harsh words which is spoken by Hiranyaksha, and he alone is the Vastava Vastu who can uproot the threefold miseries and give you happiness. Yeah, thank you very much. Any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, amazing class. A few things I wanted to reflect back, but just one thing is you mentioned in the beginning about how Krishna need not acquire any shakti or any energy, that the energy is already his, and it always has been and it always will be. So there's no need for Krishna to acquire any energy or any shakti. So in regards to the Krishna's desire and how it's stated quite often, that the one thing that Krishna cannot get without help or without being given is the love of the jivas, is love. So just trying to reconcile that in my mind, Krishna doesn't have to acquire anything himself. Everything is already his. Yet he also it would seem that he would be able to acquire the love of the jivas. There would be no need for him to acquire the love of the jivas. It's already his. So can you help me reconcile that?
Okay. I will try to answer, but maybe others also can add on some to it. Because even though everything is coming from Krishna, everything is Krishna, and everybody is depending upon Krishna's energy, potency, correct? Even the demons also getting their strength from Krishna, correct? Even an atheist, when he's trying to say that the God doesn't exist, even for an atheist who's trying to argue, even for him, the intelligence is provided by Krishna, correct? So, but however, then you can even, if you apply the same argument here, then why is Krishna giving this energy to the demons who are acting against the will of Krishna? That is because Krishna also, even though he is the basis for everything, even though he is the support for everything, at the same time he also respects the individual's independence for the jiva. And Krishna expects the jivas to reciprocate voluntarily, not like in a forcible way. So in that way, even though the living entities, the reciprocation is there, and Krishna would rather choose it to be a voluntary thing rather than just force it from the jiva. So in that way, even though Krishna is ultimately, it is his, the jivas are also his, but because of this independence which even Krishna is trying to accommodate, so we can see such apparent contradiction. And maybe Devaratha Prabhu can further add to that, I guess, if you don't
mind. Just real quick, I was just thinking just in terms of that, if he's already owns everything, mm-hmm. it's not that he has to force the love out of the jivas. He already owns all of the energy, so there's no need for him to force the jivas to love him. He already, and to acquire that, he already has the love. He already has whatever
shakti. He has it, but we don't have it. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. What I was thinking is that Rupa Goswami describes how Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti, which means he's a reservoir of all rasa.
Yeah.
And so he's actually experiencing the exchange of love already with his most infinite associates and devotees. But it's for us to benefit.
Exactly.
That he's concerned.
Exactly. Yeah. Maharaj wants to make a point.
Just one short point, and that is Krishna, as you mentioned, he has everything. He needs nothing, but he gets special pleasure out of sharing what he has with as many of his devotees or even non-devotees. He likes to share because when he shares himself, they become better or higher or greater or more perfect. And he likes seeing the devotees becoming better and better. For that reason, he comes to bring what he knows and share it. So that's Krishna's nature, to share and not merely hold. Otherwise, he doesn't have to come here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yanta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank
you.